When we did go on holidays recently, my wife Kate and my family and I, we went way up to the north of New South Wales, just south of Queensland, and one of the things, we had a great time on our holidays, and one of the things that we did on our holidays was we drove into Surfers Paradise. It was just about 45 minutes up the road on the Gold Coast there, and in Surfers Paradise there's this building, it's called Sky Point, and it's like 77 stories high. It's the highest building on the Gold Coast, and you can go up there in a lift and right up to the top level, and you get this amazing 360 degree view of the Gold Coast and out towards the Pacific Ocean. It's just, it's an incredible place. And so we all decided that we were going to go there. Well, at least a few of us had decided that we'd like to go there, but a few in our family are a bit scared of heights and they weren't so sure. Anyway, we got there. We managed to convince them all, those of us that were in favour, managed to say, yes, this is going to be fine, it'll be all right. And we got there, and we got to the bottom of the lift, and the person that was at the lift there said, oh, you know, this is one of the fastest lifts in Australia. And we thought, beauty, here we go. So in we hop, and we went up, and like, it felt like within about 3 seconds we're at the top of level 77. And the doors opened, and there was two different reactions, because the doors opened and you had this great expanse of glass, like floor-to-ceiling glass, about 5 metres, 6 metres high, something like this. And you open and you saw this great expanse of glass looking out onto the Pacific Ocean. And there was two different reactions. So myself and Tom just went, whoa, look at this. Tom went running up to the glass. Oh, look at that. That's cool as anything. But there was another reaction. And it was a bit scared. We had a different level of trust in the structural integrity of the building, but it's fair to say the fact that we all managed to get up there, and then once we adjusted to being up that high and seeing the view, we all enjoyed it. Well, I don't know if that's quite true. We some of us coped, the rest of us enjoyed it, and we had a good time. We managed to survive and last for about half an hour, and then we went back down. But the fact that we could all go up, and the fact that we stayed up there for that long, demonstrated that we had some degree, some more than others, some degree of faith in the structural integrity of the building. Now, the next 2 weeks, what I'm going to do is explore what I think are really two important aspects of what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus. What does it look like to be a disciple in our day to day? Now, there's lots and lots of different things we could talk about when it comes to talking about discipleship. But the next 2 weeks, we've got 2 weeks, because after that we're in Advent and we're going to then go and sit in the Christmas story for a while. But the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about two specific aspects of discipleship that I think are really important for us to grapple with, and especially important for the context and the space that we find ourselves in as a church at the moment. So the first one, if you haven't already got it, is faith. I'm going to talk about faith. Not faith in the structural integrity of a 77 high story building. We're going to talk about the spiritual aspect of faith today. Now, faith is a really interesting thing, and it's hard to actually come up with a definition of what faith is. I mean, if we're Christians, if we're followers of Jesus, we'll use the word faith by saying, well, I'm a person of faith. Or if you're hoping that God might do something for you, or you've been praying and asking God to do something, you might say, I have faith that God is going to come through to me. But it's really interesting when we look at the Bible and try and get a definition of faith, we don't actually have very much in terms of actual definitions of what faith is. Now, those biblical scholars out there will say, well, what about Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1? And you're right. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, it says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. A very specific and precise and simple definition of what faith is. But in my reading of the Bible, that's actually the only definition of faith. I mean, faith's talked about a lot. Jesus implores us to have faith, but it's not actually defined very much. And we've got this very simple 14-word definition of what it is. Now, it's helpful, no doubt, this Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 passage. Very helpful, but it's not comprehensive. And so coming up with a biblical definition of faith can be a challenge. But I'm going to have a go. Let's see how we go. I believe, as we try and unpack what a biblical definition of faith is that there's five aspects of faith that we could explore. The first one is that we need to have a focus on God and not ourselves. So faith will lead us to having a focus on God, not ourselves. In Luke 17 verse 5, Jesus' disciples asked him something. They said, give us more faith, increase our faith. They somehow believed that if they had more faith, then they would see better things happen and more things happen in their lives and in the lives of those around them. And Jesus actually says to them that if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, then you can tell the mulberry bush to uproot itself and throw itself into the sea. Now, I want to focus on this idea of having faith the size of a mustard seed. Do you know how big a mustard seed is? It's about 1 to 2 millimetres. Like, you can hardly see it, at least if you're getting older like me. You can hardly see it when it sits in your hand. Jesus says if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, if you have a really, really tiny faith, that's all you need. Because the focus is not on the size of our own faith. Our focus is on the size of our big God. Our focus should not be on us trying to muster something, trying to make something or manufacture something in terms of our faith. Rather, whatever faith we do have, even if it's just a tiny amount, we focus on God. Now, when I got back to work this week, now I've got a bit of a confession to make, I guess. And when you're a minister, when you get back to, when you go to work, you're meant to love it, Now, I've been away for 4 weeks and I came back to work and I wasn't loving it on my first day, I've got to say. There was a little bit of grief there around the fact that this wonderful time that I've just had is no more and I've got to plug back in and concentrate and focus and Christmas is coming and then there's next year and there's all these things going on. And I was feeling cruddy. And I was getting down on myself and cross and grumpy. And over the course of my holidays, I'd done a number of, read a lot and, all that sort of stuff, a lot of reading. So I'd done all this reading and one of the things in my readings that I'd done had made this suggestion that sort of stuck with me, and that was to write out a gratitude list. Write out all the things that you're thankful for. And I thought, yeah, good idea. I must put that in the memory bank and do that at some stage. And as I'm sitting down there and I'm realising, this is not a good start back at work. I'm feeling rubbish. This is not good. And I just was reminded, write your gratitude list. Write your gratitude list. And I did it. Now, I thought, I'll set myself a challenge. I'm going to say, I'm feeling like rubbish. I'm going to make 20 things I'm thankful for. That's my challenge. And so I started writing them out. It actually came really easy once I started writing. There's lots of things I'm grateful for. And within my heart and my mind, there's this shift started to happen. Like this just happened. And my mood changed. No longer did I feel cruddy. My day changed. My whole week, my outlook changed. Because I realized all the things that I could be grateful for. All the things that God has blessed me with, that He's done for me. The first aspect of faith is getting the focus off ourselves and into God, onto God. Second aspect of faith is that faith will lead us to action. Now, one of the things on our holidays that we did is that we encouraged our kids to share with each other. Thought it was really important, you want your kids to be sharing with each other, and we thought, let's do that. And because we drove all the way up to Queensland, we did about 5,000 k's, 4,500 k's, something like that, and we did it in our i30. Now, 3 kids in the back seat, they were fine. They're little kids, they're sitting straight. It was all good. Car went brilliantly. It was all good. But the boot space in the i30 is not huge. So we had to, the rule was we're not allowed to pack air. So everything had to be really tightly packed. It was like, playing Tetris in the boot, trying to jam everything together just in the right shape. And one of the things we had to do is we had to limit the kids, the toys that they could take away. I just said, cruel parents, but you can't take toys away. Well, just a few little toys. We just don't have the room. There's going to be lots to do when we go away, And the toys that you do take away, you've got to share. You've got to be able to share with each other. And all holidays, we're trying to implore our kids, share. It's so important that you share. Share with each other. And they did a really good job of that. In fact, Tom took us a bit too literally at our word because on the second last day of our holiday, he came down with chickenpox. So Maria's she's term 4 start. I think we're 5 or 6 weeks into term 4. She's been at school for 10 days. Not even that, 8 days, I think, for the whole term so far. Because she had this great holiday and then she's been sick. They're all on the mend now, by the way. And they're not infectious, don't worry. In James chapter 2, verse 26, it talks about how a faith without works is a faith that is dead. It's a dead faith. And the whole context of this chapter that James is in chapter 2, is about sharing. The importance of sharing what we have with others, of not playing favourites, of looking after the poor, of looking after the marginalised, of looking after those who are in need. When I first fell in love with my wife, my now wife, when, you know, we were young and really attractive. I mean, we still are, but, you know, we were particularly so then. And you know, this beautiful woman that I fell in love with and got to know. And you know, one of the things that drew me to her from the very first moments that I got to know her and got to know her really well was the kindness that she demonstrated to others. She's just, and Kate's just an amazingly kind and thoughtful person. She has this ability to remember details about people. She has an ability to ask questions about people's lives, to be generous and all of that sort of stuff. And it's really interesting when Kate's just being Kate and she's being kind to people. People react in funny ways sometimes. Sometimes people almost want to push it back and say, oh, you know, that's great, thanks for being kind, but I'm going to pay you back. You know, I've got to, you know, whenever you need anything, let me know and I want to, you know, I'll be there for you, I want to help you and all of that sort of stuff. And it's interesting, but Kate's kindness doesn't come from a transactional space. Kate's not being kind to people because she's expecting anything back. See, the kindness that Kate operates is a direct relationship, has a direct relationship with her faith in God. Because she is loved by God. She can't help love others. Now, she's exceptional at it. It's a way in which God's wired her. But I have no doubt that faith leads to action. Whatever that might be. Third one, faith is something that is individual, but it involves others. Faith is something that it's individual, but it involves others. Now, a couple of years ago, in our community garden, in the New Gisborne Community Garden, which is just located on the church property just down there, you would have seen it as you come in, the guys and the girls had a go at growing some corn. Now, where's Malcolm? How did that go for you, Malcolm? It wasn't one of the raging successes, it's fair to say. Now the garden's going great guns at the moment. They're doing amazing things. I came in on Wednesday, and the kitchen, like, it is buzzing. We've got people that aren't part of this Sunday morning congregation coming in and joining us and cooking food, and then it's going out to people in our community that are in need. It's incredible what's happening through that garden, and if you've got time on Wednesday morning, come along. Even if you're not a gardener, it's a great time and you'll enjoy it and you get to interact with all sorts of great people. But that's not what I'm saying. This corn crop was a bit of a failure. And there's lots of reasons as to why it might have been a failure. And when you've got a group of gardeners together, they'll all come up with a different reason. My reason is that I don't think the soil quality was that good, and that was why, but, you know, others here would disagree with me. But corn itself as a crop is an amazing plant, if you see how it grows. See, for corn to grow well individually, it needs to be growing well alongside other corn, which is also growing. See, for corn to grow well, it needs to be really close together so that cross-pollination happens, which allows the cobs to form well and make, you know, really big, long, healthy cobs. And so in order for corn to grow well, and for it to be fruitful, they need to be close together. Another interesting thing about a large-scale crop of corn is that the corn is growing up next to each other. It provides for itself, for the whole crop, some protection against the wind and the storms. So if you've got a single stalk of corn and a big wind or a storm comes, it's probably going to knock it over. But if you've got a whole lot of corn planted closer together and they're all growing up straight, then there's some protection when the winds and the storms come. Another aspect about putting corn close together is that in order for the corn to grow, it needs to reach higher, closer to the sun, because it's competing, or perhaps the other corn plants are encouraging it to grow higher and higher. Whereas if it grows out by itself, it doesn't need to work so hard to get the sun. You see, our faith might be an individual thing, but to grow, we need to be growing alongside others. In Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17, it talks about, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens the other. Now, in order for this to take place, we need to allow ourselves to be open and vulnerable to others to share with others what's going on in our life, to get them to pray and to speak into our lives, to be willing to be vulnerable so that we can grow alongside others. Brings us to our fourth aspect of faith, and that is that faith must be held with intention, with tension, with doubt. See, if you read the atheists, and there's plenty around, you know, your Dawkins, your Hitchens, those sort of guys, and they're writing about reasons why God might exist and expressing a whole lot of doubt about God and his existence and even whether, you know, he loves us or whether what Christians believe is really true and all that sort of stuff. And there's all this doubt that's been expressed. And what's really interesting is when I read these guys and I read through what their reasons are and their justifications for their position are, is that nothing what they're writing is new. You can read it in the Bible. You can read it in books like Psalms, like Job, like Habakkuk, like Lamentations, where many great heroes of the faith expressed doubt about God. Doubt that he existed. Doubt that his love was there for us. I don't think it's wrong to express doubt. In fact, I think it can be quite healthy to hold doubt, especially when it's held in tension with faith and belief. See, faith is never meant to be stagnant. We're on this continuous learning journey. We're always discovering new things about God. We're discovering new things about his love and his grace, about his purpose, about the plan that he has for us. And you know what the impetus often is for those new learnings and that journey is doubt. When we have questions and we start questioning things and we go to God and ask questions and we wait on God for answers. Sometimes he gives them to us straight away. Sometimes it takes years. But we hold doubt in tension with faith. Sometimes we have a crisis of faith where the doubt that we experience overrides the faith that we have. And we just see and feel doubt much more than faith. I had one such experience. I've had many, but I had one such experience, and I've shared this story before, but 12 years ago, my brother-in-law died tragically. Now, in one sense, his death wasn't a surprise. We knew that with his illness, it was a possibility that it might happen. But we'd prayed so hard for him. We prayed for his healing for years leading up to his death. And after he had died, you know, I had so many questions, so much doubt. You know, my faith took a hammering. It's a crisis of faith. I was a minister at the time. And I had to be trying to encourage people to have faith in God, where inside me there was not a whole lot of faith, but there was a whole lot of doubt. Now, part of that experience, or that experience partly, along with some other experiences, led me to step back from ministry for a time. And I had 3 years, 2.5, 3 years out of ministry before coming to this church. And I've been at this church now for almost 6.5 years. And as I look back on the last 12 years, as I've hung on to my faith, sometimes by the tip of my fingernails, I can look back on the last 12 years and I can see how amazing God has been. Sure, there are questions that I have which won't be answered this side of eternity. But God has blessed me so much. He's blessed me financially. I'm not rich, but man, God has blessed us financially. We're so comfortable. And we keep getting surprised by how God is blessing us financially each step of the way. God has blessed us with an amazing, Kate and I has blessed us with 3 amazing kids that are bright and just so lovely and intelligent and creative, just amazing kids. God's blessed us with an incredible church. Sometimes you have to go away to realize afresh how amazing this group of people is. So many things I could talk about, too many things. But while there are doubts, I've realized time and time again that God has been so faithful. He loves us so much. The gratitude list that I talked about earlier, I thought it would take me forever. It took me 5 minutes. Once I started writing, it just flowed, came out real quick. Sometimes you come across people in the church that seem to have no doubt whatsoever. I don't know, you know, they're good at quoting scripture, I've found. And they'll quote bits of scripture at you and they'll, you know, something absolutely terrible will happen and they'll say it's just part of God's plan. You know, that sort of stuff. And, I've been through an experience where those words and those scriptures mean nothing. At the depths of despair. At the best, those who have an absence of doubt are either misguided at best, at worst they're deluded. I think it's important that when it comes to doubt and the doubt that I guess we all have at different times, that we're honest about it. We're honest about it to ourselves and we're honest about it to others. Because it's in the midst of expressing those doubts, of sharing them with each other, that our faith actually becomes stronger. Last one that we're talking about in terms of faith today, and that is faith leads to healing. Faith will lead to healing from sin, from brokenness and from disease. In James 5:15 it says, a prayer offered up in faith will make a sick person well and the Lord will raise them up. And if they've sinned, they will be forgiven. Now this is an exciting passage of scripture we have here in the Bible. See, we might have our doubts. Our faith might be the size of a 1 millimeter mustard seed. But when we go to him, there is the possibility that if we're sick, we're going to be made well. That if we're broken, we'll be restored. And absolutely, if we've sinned, we're forgiven. Doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what's been done to you. There's a freedom and a life that is available to Jesus, in Jesus today, that is just not possible any other way. A.W. Tozer, a writer who I'm a huge fan of, says, faith is the gaze of the soul upon a saving God. Faith is the gaze of a soul upon a saving God. I love this idea of gaze. You know, it sort of indicates that it happens over a length of time. That you don't just see things happen immediately, though sometimes that is how it happens. But this idea of gazing upon God. We have a vision here as the church. We've talked about it many times. Next year we're going to ramp up our efforts to live into this vision, which is about living in what God has for our church. We want to establish small groups of people that have real missional intent to reach out into their community. Beyond that, we want to start new congregations and new churches because we know that is the most effective way in which God uses us to connect with people and see the love of Jesus go out into our community and beyond. But for this to happen, it's just got to start with prayer, with the gaze upon the soul. And when we gaze, when we pray, not only do good things happen for us, not only does the healing come, but if together as a group we are doing that too, then I believe God's doing great things in us. Yesterday, one of the things I do in serving the broader Churches of Christ movement in the Churches of Christ VicTAS is that I sit on what's known as the endorsement panels. I'm also a part of our endorsement task force, which oversees anyone looking to become an endorsed minister of the Churches of Christ, Victoria, Tasmania or ordained. And so I sit on that and I get to interview people and to discern if God is actually calling them into ministry. And it's a really privileged position to be in. And yesterday I interviewed three different people with another person and just three incredible people, all different people. But there was one individual that just has spoken to me in a really amazing way. A guy about my age. Yes, he's a young guy. His name's Trung. He's Vietnamese. And 18 months ago, he took over a Vietnamese church in Richmond, Church of Christ in Richmond, that's predominantly Vietnamese. When he took it on 18 months ago, it was a fractured church. There'd been dysfunction, there'd been strife, church was in decline, they were in a lot of trouble, their building was almost ready to be decommissioned. And Trung just has, you know, energy and life about him, so he's got in there and he's got the place going. Cleaned it up, got the building good. He's an evangelist, so he's been out and he's got a team around and they're going out and they're connecting with other Vietnamese people. Now the church is almost 200 people in it now, 18 months later. Seen this amazing growth. And I talked to Trung and talked about the backstory of the church and what was happening and how it all happened and all the things that had happened and all that sort of stuff and the fact that they've got drug addicts or ex-drug addicts in the church that are being set free from addiction. They've got people with gambling addictions that are being set free, people with other financial strife that are being cared for. All these sorts of amazing things that are happening and the team that he's building is leading. It's just such a healthy move of God that is happening in that place. And I asked Trung to talk to me about his story. What's led him to do this? And so he told me his story. Just over 15 years ago, he immigrated. Him and his wife, he grew up in a Christian environment, but he'd sort of walked away from God and he immigrated out to Australia. And so him and his wife, as immigrants can do, set their hearts and their minds towards setting up businesses. And he did it, and he did it successfully. And over 15 years, he built up businesses, retail businesses. He had jewelry business, had clothing business, had other businesses. I lost track of all the businesses that he had. And he was incredibly successful. Made a lot of money in 15 years. Did really well. And then he said, and about 5 years ago, my best mate died suddenly. And it shook me to my core. And I just went back to God And God really spoke to me. And I realized that he had a call on my life and I had to step out into looking and serving him and looking for ways to serve him. So he and his wife agreed and they sold up all their businesses. And for the next couple of years, they went and volunteered in another Vietnamese church, which is in Footscray, and they volunteered there for a few years. He ended up being an assistant pastor at this church because they saw him as a guy with great potential and energy and all of that sort of stuff, all unpaid for. And then 18 months ago, Richmond came calling. And when I appear on, when I sit on these panels, and what way it happens is that there's two people interviewing each candidate, and then we interview three or four candidates at one, and then all the people come together that are the interviewers, and we discern together whether the candidate is suitable for endorsement or not. Now I can't actually tell you whether Trung's been endorsed or not because we haven't let him know. I think you can guess where it's going though. Anyway. We sat down there and we talked about, and we have all this information that we read, and so we all know about each of the candidates, and we talk about the questions we need to ask and all that sort of stuff. And we talked about Trung, and it wasn't a very long conversation that was required. And I just said, you know, faith just drips out of him. You know, one of the things he does is whenever they're faced with a challenge in his church, he gets a group of people together and he said, first thing we do is pray. You know, God's been speaking to me a while about prayer. You know, it's an area in our church that we could lift, I reckon. And so, you know, I've had a go at defining faith. We've got it there on the board and, you know, I feel like I'm being pretty clever because what are those things called? A cross sticks or something? I don't usually get that clever, but there we have it. It's hard to define faith. But you know it when you see it. I have a sense within our congregation over the last few months that a spiritual shift has been happening. That God is raising up within us people that are going to be warriors of faith. That will take massive risks in serving God. And the starting point for this is prayer. I want to be a faith warrior. I don't think I'm there yet. That's where I want to go. I wonder who wants to join me. If you do want to join me, I've got a book In fact, I've got 8 copies. Maybe I'm not being very optimistic. I've got 8 copies of a book to give away today. A little booklet written by Stuart Robinson. We had Stuart here a few months ago and he came and addressed the issue of Islam. And Stuart is a prayer warrior, one of the guys that really inspires me in this area. And he's written this fantastic little book, and it's got, I don't know how many, hundreds of stories all around the world of how God is answering prayer. And if you're looking for an injection of faith in your prayer life, great little book to read. And if God is stirring something within you today in this area of faith and prayer, come and see me after the service, and this is yours. I'll give you one. If I run out, I'll get some more. They're not much, and I'm happy for the church to pay. I think it's a great investment.